We are en route to a facility with a 24-year-old male fell from the roof of a two-story building.
We got a party one trauma.
Driver involved in a motor vehicle accident.
65-year-old male complaining of chest pain.
22-year-old male, multiple GSWs to the abdomen.
He's circling the drain.
I'm Tanya Mantooth, and welcome to the Into the Unknown podcast. Welcome to Into the Unknown podcast series. I'm Tanya Mantooth, here with Randy Mantooth and Kevin Tai to talk about the upcoming documentary, Into the Unknown, Paramedics Journey. So, hey, we're all here today in LA. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Emergency. It's been put on, huge event here, put on by LA County Fire Museum. It's been amazing. We all just had dinner together. We're enjoying a glass of wine while we're talking. So today you had fans come in, and I know you guys have experienced this multiple times, but come from across the country and around the world to meet you and chat with you and take a picture. And it's got to be incredible after 50 years to still have the kind of passion that these fans have. So what was that feel like?
Well, it feels pretty amazing to me. I mean, as I've said so many times, Kevin and I didn't even think we were going to get picked up after the first year, let alone have a show that still resonates after 50 years. It just still blows me away. And it makes me feel proud, makes me feel old. But nonetheless, it's just amazing when I see these people come up to me time and time again and ask for an autograph and tell me they are a firefighter, or they are a paramedic, or they're a nurse, or they're an ER doctor because of the show. I'm humbled by that. That's just all I can say is that I'm just humbled by it.
And amazing the age range.
Oh, it's, well, that's to have these little kids.
Yeah, right, exactly.
A whole new generation. Have these little kids come up. You know, I'm sure I look more like Johnny Gage's dad than I do Johnny Gage, but the show, for whatever reason, just captured everybody's heart, and they've embraced it and kept a hold of it for 50 years.
It's quite remarkable. Kevin, what's it been for you?
Well, there were two factors working when we were doing Emergency. One was it was entertainment. And the other was, and with that comes story. But also there was the rescues and the paramedic and serving the community in that way as an extension out in the streets. And one thinks that one wouldn't have had the paramedic program without the community that it serves. I mean, you wouldn't have had the, community that's being served without the paramedics. And it works both ways. And I think we're starting to recognize that more and more as cases, that we come across have now broadened the type of care that's out there that's demanded is, a lot of it is mental care, is dealing with, issues that we didn't deal with before 50 years ago. The inside of a drug box doesn't look anything like it used to.
Right. Well, and what's interesting is when you go back and you think 50 years, 50 years ago, there was only a handful in the country. And that's really quite remarkable. And so when you see all the people that were there today, and you see how passionate they were and their careers, and it had to be really remarkable for you now, but looking back on it, and I know we've talked about this before, it's like you had no idea that you were actually creating an industry.
No, certainly did not. But it became pretty clear after about 4 or 5 years that we were having an impact on the industry, on EMS. And at that time, it wasn't called EMS. It was just this new thing, paramedics. And we had no idea that it was creating an industry is exactly the way you should put it as well, because with all the paramedics, the new medicines, the new equipment that's out there, it has spawned just corporations that are making millions and billions of dollars feeding into the EMS system today. And they really owe it, to those early pioneers of you know, 18 paramedics in L.A. and 12 or 13 in Seattle and 15 or whatever there were in Miami and Columbus, Ohio, and Pittsburgh. And then all of a sudden, the show comes along, exposes this new program, and it just explodes. And all of a sudden, the people are sitting at home back in the 70s, and they're turn on 8 o'clock on Saturday night. They look up and they go, wait a minute, can they really do that? And then they all say, we want that. Now, how many times Kevin and I have gone out to different public appearances, and they would actually take us into the room, you know, city leaders would take us into the room and say, we want what you're showing on TV. How do we do that? And Kevin and I are looking at one another going, oh my God, we're actors. You know, I don't know. And that's when we both started to really delve into what a moving tribute this is for any show to affect a system and have it grow like wildfire after that. Again, it was daunting, but it was also so incredibly fulfilling today.
Well, and don't you think the style in which the show was shot actually added to it? So it didn't feel so, you know, contrived. It was very real, almost documentary-like, which was unheard of in that time.
Right.
And, you know, when you're out in the field and you're working through that, yes, you knew what you needed to say, but it was still very much, you knew what you were trying to accomplish, but you were kind of ad-libbing to show them that this was the reality of what it's like to be in the field. That was really kind of groundbreaking during that time.
Yeah, more than once, Kevin and I, we would go in and we would just look at the rescue. We wouldn't look at the dialogue at all because half the time the dialogue didn't fit what we were doing. So Kevin and I would just, we would ad-lib as if we were actually doing the rescue. We would talk back and forth. And at first it was sort of tolerated, and then after a while it was encouraged.
Expected.
Yeah, encouraged. Do it, you know.
Now we have a viable EMS system in the country. It works very well. But the paramedic is what interests us, the profession of being a paramedic, the broadening of education in being a paramedic, the amount of things that they can do in the field that we were undreamt of back when we were working. And even then there were breakthroughs. So that's been a change. And that's why we want to feature the paramedic. It's why we want to talk about it, because it's a profession that's important to both of us. And we wouldn't be here without them.
Well, you know what? And it's such a celebration here today. I mean, obviously you spent time with fans today, as well as tomorrow, and then there's a big ceremony tomorrow night and a show kind of recapping the show. And my question is, was there a highlight today for you? Like, you know, I know there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fans that came through today. So was there a highlight or something that happened that was hugely meaningful?
Well, again, there was a barrage of, well, thank you so much, Mr. Ty. I wouldn't have been an EMS. I wouldn't be a paramedic. I wouldn't have been in the fire department without your show. We hear that a lot.
Yeah.
And I think, well, last night I gave a brief little, a couple sentences of just a thank you. And basically it was to our advisors when we were doing the show, because we didn't know what, you know, I was reading a BP in one scene without putting things in my ears, you know. I mean, we went from the very basics, you know, to actually some
That's
recognizable professional
advisors.
Work. So, yeah. But I think it's that we keep hearing back from them how much of an influence the show had, and then we see the community that's reaping benefits from that as well. So the system is working. People who love and care for one another, that's still going on.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Neighbors helping neighbors. It's all of us in the same political place, maybe not in the same political place, but certainly in the same socially, religious, yeah, spiritual place of caring, yeah, for one another. Yeah. And the paramedic, this is where it's about. You know, this is where it happens.
Yeah.
It's great.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
And what was your highlight?
Well, I think one, you know, after a while you begin to hear the same thing, and not that I ever get tired of that, But I think every now and then I'll drill down on somebody. Like there was a firefighter today. I think he was I don't think he was a paramedic, but he addressed something that the paramedics are going through that really piqued my interest. He said he was from Pennsylvania, and we all know that there are way more volunteer firefighters and paramedics in Pennsylvania than paid. And he said, we're losing volunteers. Nobody wants to volunteer anymore. Well, now I had heard the same thing in another state about paramedics. They're just not filling the coffers. People are leaving, and there aren't anybody there to fill that role. And I asked him what he felt was the problem, and he said, you know, and I agree with a lot of what he said, but his opinion was it's the generation. Mm. Nobody wants to volunteer anymore. And if you think about that, you think, okay, this person has to sacrifice time, sacrifice money, put his life sometimes in his own life in danger. He takes a certain amount of things away from his own family. And this was all, you know, back when Kevin and I were young, this was all something people wanted to do. And now nobody wants to do it.
Well, you know, that's interesting because actually there is this whole generation that are coming in and they're making career choices and professional choices that are really kind of purpose driven. And so, you know, maybe they just don't know how valuable this profession can be.
And maybe our film might change that.
Yeah.
Because the one thing, we're not only just exploring what a paramedic goes through, the mental stresses but, you know, also the fact that they're going to be directly impacted by not having paramedics around. Somebody's got to come up and stand up and say, okay, I volunteer. It's not easy. Nobody said it was. But the fact that you would do this to help your fellow man is probably the most honorable, most noble thing anybody can possibly do. And I see this on a daily basis with paramedics and anybody in the EMT business. They're underpaid, they're overworked, and yet they still say, I wouldn't do anything else other than this. Those people are born to do what they do, you know, and I know other people are as well. They just need a spark, and we're hoping that our film will not only expose, you know, the mental juggling act that they all go through, but I hope it will also inspire them that, yeah, this is what I want to do. It's so noble. It's such a noble job. And I'm hoping that this film will do that.
The Los Angeles County Fire Museum celebrates the history of the American Fire Service and the contributions made to that history by the Los Angeles County Fire Department. One of the Los Angeles County Fire Museum's goals is to document and present the evolution, history, and impact of fire-based emergency medical services. Well, let's talk about it's Into the Unknown, The Paramedic's Journey, a documentary, full-length feature documentary. And I know that this has just been a huge passion for both of you. Obviously there's been, you know, we've seen what emergency has done. We've seen what an impact it's had. And yet there was such a sense that both of you wanted to tell this story. And you know, you shared a bit about the why. Kevin, what was your why in terms of why this film was important to make?
Well, because they've kept us within their fabric, you know. I mean, we've... Once they care for you, you know, you're
there's no getting out.
Yeah, right. You're bound and determined to give back. And I think that's really what it's about, is giving back, and this is the best way we can do it. And it's also not just emergent medicine, but it's preventative medicine. You know, what the paramedic and what the EMS and what the station house brings to the community that surrounds them, you know. Good stuff.
So documentaries, obviously, you know, they take a while. So how long has it been in development?
It will be 3 years this coming September, and we're now in August. I had no idea. I've shot feature films that were quicker than this. But it takes time, you know. It's like making a good wine, you know. You got to let it sit. Or making a good scotch. Believe me, we're not going to sit on this for 12 years. but it's way more work than I thought. When I first, you know, I called Kevin, I said, what do you think? Would you like to do this? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, let's put together the best team we possibly could and that we possibly can.
And then Kevin said, yeah, they're not available. Who else can we get?
Yeah, right, exactly. But I got them anyway. I knew my little sister was not a little sister anymore, that she was now in a position where she's hiring me. But I watched your work, not only in feature films, but I also watched your work in documentaries. And I couldn't think of anybody I trusted more than have you be there. You're just so calm, so even keeled. And you know what you're doing way more than I do. And I just knew that you had to ramrod it. And then I asked Steve Martin and Baxter Larman to come in.
So just a little background on both of them. Go ahead. They're more than the guys that make the great cocktails during the holidays.
Yeah, but they make a hell of a good
cocktail.
Yeah,
they do.
Yeah. I met Steve back in 99. Back in 1999, we did The Boys Are Back or something like some fan put together this thing, and I thought, what is this all about? And she was getting all the emergency people together in a convention center in Burbank, I think. And I met Steve, and Steve was working with Chief Freeman at the time. I think Steve was a captain at the time. And, you know, we got along really great. And of course, I met Bax. I was doing speeches all over the country, and I'd see Bax there. He had his own lectures. And finally, one day when he really clicked in for me, was in Salt Lake City, Utah. And we just became really good friends. And I guess this was in, gosh, we've known one another for about 25 years. And so I said, well, let me just ask Steve and Bax if they'd kind of help us out on the technical side.
And so just to clarify, they come with some credentials, I would say. So Steve Martin, Assistant Fire Chief, LA County, 36 years, now retired.
Yep.
Dr. Baxter Lorman, head of EMS Medical.
Professor of Medicine at UCLA.
David Geffen. School of Medicine.
Yeah, so they weren't slouches. And because, well, in fact, they weren't slouches to the point that we just said, you got to help us produce this. And we made them producers. And I can't think of anybody better. And Kevin and our goal was to put together the best team that we possibly could, then get the hell out and stay the hell out and let you guys tell that story. And so far, you guys have done nothing but, I mean, I'm just so impressed with what you've done. Oh, and then I think you should take up, Tanya, how we came about Tom, our director.
Yeah, Tom Putnam, amazing director. And it took us a long time to find what we thought as a group was really the right fit. Because not only do we need, you know, someone who is a consummate filmmaker, But someone who also understood the EMS industry and understood first responders. And I think that was a thing that was the hardest fit. We knew it was really important for them to understand the industry, but also be a good storyteller. And so, director of burn, which was hugely widely acclaimed in the fire industry.
Yeah.
And he took it on and he did a follow-up film on that. But he's done so many. And we just felt like, when we first talked with him, when we all talked with him, I think it was an immediate yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, again, you've got the credentials, you've got the experience, you've got that storytelling, but he's also incredibly collaborative. So that was like the perfect mix for me.
He's just as smooth as anybody I've ever run across. And when you say storyteller, and my heart always warms up to anybody that's a storyteller. And when I saw his story, you know, our goal was to stay the hell away and stay out. Unless we saw something that really was awful and we didn't like it, we'd step in at that point. But I saw it, and there wasn't a thing I would change. Not a thing in that reel that we did that I would change. And I thought, we're the luckiest people in the world because we have four or five of the greatest producers I've ever worked with. And now we've got this director who is an incredible storyteller. And he's so easy to work with. He's such a delight that I just feel like we've been blessed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get the support of, AT&T, FirstNet, and Zoll and Massimo. I just feel like this whole process has been blessed.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been incredible to be able to travel the country and to tell these stories and to go, everywhere from Baton Rouge to Denver to Oregon, North Carolina, Nevada.
Reno, yeah.
And really kind of dive into these people's lives. And, I know, Kevin, you and I talked about the whole idea of like, how do we tell the story of the trauma that they experience and what's that path for them? And, and I know that's something that's kind of near and dear to your heart. You work very close with hospice. You understand that very kind of emotional piece to what people go through. What was it like for you when we all decided, we really wanted to tackle this whole mental health issue and what first responders, specifically paramedics, are dealing with?
Well, it just seemed like... I was reminded of the beginning of the paramedic program, which was in Northern Ireland, and it dealt with the war there, with the religious war, and how it came to the Vietnam War. The next was had a huge impact on the tools that we used in hospitals, and would later be quite an influence when it came to the paramedic program and, serving people in the field.
That was really the genesis of it.
Yeah, yeah. So I've always kind of felt that there was a kinship to war in the story. War being, difficulty on the streets, overdoses, in all its guises. There are some similarities. And
kind of a metaphor.
Yeah, yeah. So it really addresses our time. And what we're going through, and yet it's a friend.
Well, you bring up a really good point because being on the road and filming, I think one of the things that really shocked me was the impact of the homeless, and how that really has been tough on paramedics, but also the whole opioid and fentanyl. And how that has integrated into so many things in terms of the people just taking, casual weed, marijuana, and then all laced with fentanyl and what they're dealing with and how paramedics are having to shift for that and how the numbers are exploding. And it really is. It is really a war for them.
And that all falls on the paramedic shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first responders. And it's only been... I'm going to have to kind of refer to Bax. We just started Narcon, less than 10 years ago. It's only been around where paramedics actually use that. It's only been this past 10 years, correct?
For first responders, yeah. But Paramedics have been doing it for quite a while. I'm going to guess it's been almost since my life expectancy, and Steve's in the room with me. I'm guessing so, like 30 years plus, we've been probably doing Narcan. But for first responders, for the layperson, for EMTs, for police officers, and other community
less
stuff.
Less than 10.
Oh, it's definitely less than 10 years that Narcan's been used.
Okay, so the system, when Kevin and I were involved in it, when it first started, it was just like, well, first off, the need wasn't there because it just, you know.
There wasn't the synthetic drugs like there is now.
Exactly, exactly. But now it is so commonplace. And where does this go? It doesn't go to the emergency room because they don't go. It falls on the part, on the shoulders of first responders. And that's just a small example of what's being placed on the paramedic's shoulders.
Right. Yeah, and before you go there, one of the stories that we heard over and over, which was really pretty shocking, is that, you know, they would come in on a Monday morning and they would start to get these fentanyl calls, and they literally would track the blocks, and it would like, oh, okay, a batch came in. So they knew when they had so many runs, so many calls on this block, that pretty much it was going to go block, block, block. So it's like they knew a bad batch came in and they knew how to wave. So when they would end their shift and they'd say to the next shift, yeah, it's bad.
You got your hands full.
You got your hands full.
We've also learned from the pandemic, you know, it wasn't too long ago that we were counting outrageous totals of elderly dying alone in rest homes across the country, into the thousands, hundreds of thousands. That's pretty sobering.
Yeah.
And the paramedics and all of the folks who served the people were out there trying to help in any way they could.
I mean, we went on calls with people where the elderly had just fallen and they lived alone, and they'd finally made it to their phone, maybe a day or two later, just to be, what do they call it? Assisted lifting, and basically that's what they were. So they knew, paramedics knew, that they were just showing up to lift them up off the ground, make sure they're okay, take their vitals, you know, make sure they have their medicine, and then leave. And they do it with the same kind of compassion as if someone was having a heart attack. And that's really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you see these people do it, you see in their eyes, they're not bored with their job. They're not tainted in any way. They truly care for the people that they're working with, and that's what just makes my heart swell that I have anything at all to do with paramedics, because it really takes a special kind of human being to do what a paramedic does. And like I've said so many times, you don't learn to be a paramedic so much as you are born to be a paramedic.
That sense of compassion and empathy.
Yeah.
So talk about the title, Into the Unknown. Talk about the origin of that.
Well, you know, my memory of that is different than yours. But all I know is that it's perfect. Because when we, on the show, you would hear man down, and they would give the address. And the paramedics, they didn't know, why was the man down? You know, was he having a heart attack? Was he hit by a car? Was he shot? You know, we didn't know. And so when we got there, so we're literally driving into the unknown. We don't know what to expect. And a paramedic has to be pretty light on his feet to assess it and to address it. And that's... And so when it was brought up, I went, oh, into the unknown. That's pretty good. And then I think you tagged on the paramedic's journey. We didn't want to specify one paramedic. It was just the paramedic's journey. Is that how you remember it?
Well, actually, I remember it was a conversation. We were all on a conference call. We were talking about it. And the issue came up of, you know, whether or not when they got the call, you know, did they know? Did they fully understand what, you know, what the call was about? And it was actually, you know, Chief Steve Martin who said, actually, you know, they're walking in the into the unknown. They have no idea what they're walking into. They don't know. Right. You know, it could be this, it could be that. And when I heard into the unknown, I'm like, that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
So, no, came from Steve.
Yep. See, I remember that it came inadvertently from me, which was walking. I had walking into the unknown. And Steve said, no, into the unknown. Drop the walking.
For you to say, actually, it came from me.
You're on that call.
And I said,
co-producers of the show.
So basically, collectively,
we've all witnessed an accident, and everybody has a different version of the accident, okay?
And well, I believe in Kevin's story, personally.
Well, I believe that that I thought it up.
I take full credit
for
it.
As the whole movie, Mr. Mantoo.
Baxter pushed Kevin away from his microphone just to get to the, you know, so he could make his statement.
His beer, not the microphone.
That's right. The Into the Unknown podcast is brought to you by FirstNet, built with AT&T. FirstNet is the only network built with and for first responders, including paramedics and EMTs. It's designed to fit your evolving communications needs with innovative mission-critical solutions so you can keep yourself and your communities safe. You know what? So this is the first time you guys have executive produced a documentary. Well, what's been the biggest surprise for you?
The amount of freaking work. Good grief. I had no idea. I thought, you know, hey, I'm an executive producer. I'll sit back and give orders. But that isn't the case at all. And you guys have done all the work. I mean, all the work. So I can't take any credit for it. But it's just the amount of time to get it right, mm-hmm. to line up the right people and to interview people who possibly we're going to film, and to get it right. And it's just a lot of work. How you do it, Tanya, and still run the San Diego International Film Festival is beyond me. You can juggle. I can't even cook one egg. If somebody's talking in a room, I go, stop, I'm cooking an egg here. How you can do that is beyond me. And my hat is totally off to you.
I'm not sure this year.
I am.
So, Kevin, what's been your big surprise?
I think just seeing, you know, how when you open the field up to everybody's participation, mm-hmm. how everybody brings things in, and they're not only strengths, but they then make you come up with something. We respond. We're responding to one another creatively. Mm-hmm. And I like those sessions when they happen. Yeah. Like we had one just before we went on air here,
yeah.
you know, where it was fun.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, because I think it's one of those things where everybody's kind of pushing each other. And you know, and out of it comes something deeper and richer.
And in that push, we're learning. Mm-hmm. You know. So,
you know, you brought up AT&T FirstNet, mm-hmm. Massimo Zoll. Incredible. They came in very, very early on, really kind of saw the vision that you guys really crafted and kind of brought to the table, really, really behind it. And that's been incredible to see the industry as a whole really come in and really support it. And that's been really, and the associations that have come in, the advisory board. I mean, has that surprised you to see that kind of support across the industry?
It did with the associations, mm-hmm. because they sometimes don't play nice with each other in the sandbox. But the board, I kind of knew who I wanted, you know, some on the board. But then when Bax and Steve came in and we started pulling in all these names, and I said, well, I don't know whether they'll sit on the board or not. They probably won't. Well, they all did. Everybody jumped in saying, yeah, we want to be part of this. Now, that surprised me. All the associations lined up.
Yeah.
I think 19, 20.
Yeah.
They all lined up. And listen, you know, ask Baxter. This is like, you know, wrangling mice, getting these people to all be in the same room.
Well, they really cross all of the aspects of EMS, which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because of everything from
emergency, dispatch to
emergency nurses.
Right.
Yeah. Emergency physicians, flight, all of that. And
yeah.
Fire. Yeah. It's been fascinating to see
and
that.
And for all of them to hold hands and sing Kumbaya is like, you know, not that doesn't happen very often, if ever.
Well, and you know what's interesting is that I know in the early days, especially when we talked to the dispatch associations, and that was so fascinating for me because I think that's an element that most people see it one way, but it's really another way. And I think that's one thing that really has come out of the filming is seeing the stories that come out of dispatch. And I think that's an area that doesn't get the understanding fully.
No.
And doesn't understand that it's so intricate, the complexity of the education that it takes and the patience to stay with it. And then they let it go and they hand it off and they never know what happens. And so they may stay with it. In one story, a woman doing dispatch said the longest time she had stayed on a call was 45 minutes helping someone through CPR, and it was a child.
Mm.
And that woman took that in. So when you talk about trauma and you talk about what paramedics see, what they experience, think about what the dispatchers are dealing with, can only hear. And they're the very first touch.
Yeah.
And so that's also a story.
And they start the ball rolling.
Right.
They make the decision, do I call in the police?
Mm-hmm.
Do I call in the fire department? Do I call in EMTs?
Right.
They have to make that call. And that kind of can weigh heavy on you.
And then you have the exemplary position of the paramedic coming back again to the broad education, the reach, the total reach that's out there in the field. I'm reminded of a line by Wallace Stevens, how high that highest candle lights the dark. That, to me, is what the paramedic means to medicine.
I love that. Say that line again.
How high that highest candle lights the dark.
Mm. Oh, that's awesome.
Anyway.
That was a throwaway for Kevin. That was nothing.
That was very impressive. I'm writing that down. So tomorrow night, there's going to be an awards. There's going to be a show, a bit of a retrospective.
Awards?
Well, not awards. All right. I think Steve and I are getting awards tomorrow night. Are we?
Oh, you are?
You guys are presenting it to us.
Oh, well, nice to let me know that now.
But it's a bit of a retrospective. It's a bit of kind of looking back and also kind of talking about all the people also that were involved in the show and get a chance to hear from them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's it feel like leading into something like that?
Again, it makes you feel old. You know, I thought I was, you know, coming into a nursing home when I saw half these people. And I was like, okay, all right, well, you know, I'm just as old as they are. And it's hard to quantify, you know, the amount of emotion that it really sets off in me because, you know, I could never shake EMS when I left the show. I can never shake firefighters and shake paramedics out of my soul. I don't know. It just touched me in a way.
Yeah, why? Well,
I don't know.
What was the spark for you?
I don't know. It's hard to really kind of nail down. It's just that I never had been exposed to people who were paramedics, who were firefighters, who were EMTs. I'd never been exposed to that kind of a human being before. And they were so selfless. And, you know, you have to understand, Kevin and I kind of were in a business where, you know, the paramedic will always turn around. And I had a paramedic who was kind of, I was riding along with him, Bob Bellevaux said, turned around and and I was following him, you know, and he turned around and he looked at this the scene that we were at, and he said, always turn around before you leave. He said, always turn around and ask yourself, what more can I do for that person? Mm. And I was like, oh, wow. Because Kevin and I were in a business where they would turn around and say, what more can I get from that person?
Wow.
And that never left me. Mm. Mm. And I thought, man, that's who I want to grow up to be.
That's humanity.
Yeah. And that exposed me to that. And I just could never shake that feeling. And I'm sure it was there before, but he brought that out with that comment. And he was so selfless and so sincere about it. And he just turned, walked away, didn't debate it, didn't talk about it. That was just the most selfless thing I'd ever been exposed to. And you know, I see that today. I see it in Baxter Larman. I see it in Steve. And that's who I want to be around.
So it's a real sense of kind of something greater than yourself and with a higher purpose.
Yeah, but more than that, that you're willing to sacrifice yourself. Wow. Yeah. It doesn't get more poignant for me.
Put your life on the line for somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I saw it on a daily basis.
Yeah. Kevin, thoughts on that?
No, I'll leave that. I'll leave that with Randy. He captured that pretty nice.
Well, he was trying to top your poem.
And that was a rough one.
It was a poem, but it was a bit of a stopper. Well, it's been incredible to talk tonight. As I said, I agree with you, Randy and Kevin. You know, I think it's been an incredible journey. I feel honored to be part of the team, honored to work with Stephen Bax and be out on the road with Tom and the team. It's been really incredible. And just kind of on a side note, on a production standpoint, I've been a producer for a very, very long time. We started filming in March, and it's been a interesting thing, because when you go out on the road and then you come back and you go back out on the road, very often your crew, they've got other jobs, and so you're kind of working with new people all the time. But not in this case. Like, every time, this crew, who is so busy and so in demand, they always open up their time and they want to be on this shoot. And that's really unusual.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's really unusual, and it's really a testament, because they feel like this is a story that needs to be told and they want to be part of it. We did lose one of our crew members. We were really disappointed in that.
But now you have to explain that. We did lose...
We did. We lost him. He was our first AC. And he decided he wanted to leave the profession and he wanted to go to paramedic school. And so he is being taught.
That's...
And he is going to paramedic school. And so he is excited...
That's one of the greatest things.
...to do that. And he had gone on, we had been filming quite a bit, and he was really... He felt like that was his calling. And so that was really, really, really incredible.
You know, if this film changed that one person, then that's fine. I'm hoping that we can change, hundreds of people, thousands maybe. But the fact that we got one and we haven't even shown the film yet, when he got exposed to the kind of people that I'm talking about and decided, that's my calling.
Yeah.
For him to quit a very lucrative job of what he was doing just to be a paramedic, my hat is off to him.
Yeah.
And, just one other note. It's like this industry has profited so much on the backs of paramedics and EMTs. And, if they want to help tell the story about the paramedic, if they want to help the paramedic, and they do need help, then, get involved. Get involved. And if you want to help support us, if your involvement is helping support this film, that's great, because your livelihood depends on these paramedics.
Yeah, and we've seen that across the board. The industries have really stepped up and said, we really believe in the film, and we really believe, especially in the topic of mental health and wellness and really supporting the paramedic. So a lot of people ask, how can they support an individual basis? And we say, you know, follow us on social media.
Yep.
At Into the Unknown Doc.
And get involved with us.
Exactly. On Instagram and also Facebook. And then also, you know, share our podcast and come back and listen to us next time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're going to enjoy another glass of wine and call it a night.
I'm going to do two.
All right, except I think you're drinking beer, so another beer for Kevin. All right, thanks for joining us tonight Into the Unknown podcast. Good night.
Thank you, Tony.
This Into the Unknown podcast is brought to you by the Public Safety Group, a Jones and Bartlett learning brand. Public Safety Group has become the world's most innovative and trusted source for educational materials and certification solutions for emergency medical services, fire, and rescue. To learn more, go to psglearning.com.